Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome to the Salieri Report Thomas Meyer, who is the founder of Perseus Publishing in Basel, Switzerland. Among other things, Perseus publishes The Present Age, which is a monthly international magazine dedicated to the advancement of spiritual science. Thomas is a leading historian and teacher of the work of Rudolf Steiner. He's the author of many books, including Rudolf Steiner's Core Mission, Karma, Reincarnation, and Biography. His interests are wide-ranging, and he has several books of great interest. One, Clairvoyance and Consciousness. Another, on 9/11, Reality, Truth, and Evil. We're going to be talking about Steiner. I was in Switzerland last year and had the opportunity to meet Thomas, who I heard about for years. And we discussed it, and he agreed that he would do this recording with us on my next trip to Switzerland. And now I'm back and we're in Zurich, and you've kindly come all the way from Basel to do this. One of the reasons for the timing on this is that our food series has been addressing biodynamic farming, which is a kind of agriculture really invented by Steiner. And so it's a perfect time to do an introduction to Steiner, something I've wanted to do for many, many years. So, Thomas, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to the Salieri Report.
Thank you for the invitation, and I'm looking forward to the questions that you're going to present.
So, who is Rudolf Steiner?
Well, Rudolf Steiner was a mid-European Austrian-born scientist. He was a Goetheanist. He worked on the Goethean Institute in Weimar for a long time, and was starting as an editor of Goethe's works. And he was then writing books about theory of knowledge, philosophy, in the stream of German idealism, Hegel, etc., etc. And then he became a spiritual researcher. And his basic idea was humanity needs not only a natural scientific view of the world, but also a spiritual view, which is not less scientific. He was not positive with the spirituality of the church that you have just to believe, or spirituality you have today, or sorts of new age streams that are irrational, even if they are interested. So his main work to begin with was to establish a solid basis for spiritual research in all directions, including biodynamic things and other things we might touch upon later.
So when your magazine says it's a monthly international magazine that covers or supports the advancement of spiritual science, you're talking about the spiritual science that was created by Steiner, or first defined by Steiner.
Yes, because that's a specific term, meaning research. It's not like humanities, or I don't know how in English you say spiritual sciences. It's a real precise method you find in the basic books described how you can become a spiritual researcher and not just a mystic. And that's his main contribution to the 20th century development in a certain sense.
And Steiner lived from 1860 to 1924. 25.
Yes, exactly. He was part of the Vienna cultural circle. If you ever go to Vienna, you have to look up the Café Greenstein. It was full of literate people, artists, Schönberg. Freud was in the vicinity. So he was really in the midst of the cultural development of the turn of the century in Vienna, which was a very fruitful place, as you know, at time. So he was a man of the world. He was not just doing his own private things. He was mixing people. He knew all these people. And
he lectured all over Europe.
He lectured later. Yeah. First he was a scientist and a philosopher. And then the philosophy was too much Kantian. So people didn't really see the value of his own philosophy. It was too Kantian. You know, Immanuel Kant.
Right.
So, and then came the Theosophists, which he didn't like. He thought they are dilettantic in a way. from a scientific point of view, and I think in many cases he was right. So he didn't actually want to join them, but they were the only circle of people to which also Ian Dunlop belonged and others that had an interest, that were open. So he went into the Theosophical Society, became the general secretary in Germany, and started giving lectures, hundreds and hundreds of them. 6,000, I think, altogether, and became what he's known for.
And what is anthroposophy?
Well, to give a definition is always a problematic thing, and there are not many things, but one could be used, maybe. This is a path of knowledge which will lead the spiritual in the human individual to the spiritual in the world, in the cosmos. This way around. That means a path to has to awaken the spiritual in ourselves first, in order to find the spirit in the world.
Right.
That's a path of knowledge, of course. So it's not some, it's not a system for belief. It's not another belief system. It's really a development path. Development is one of the key words in anthroposophy and in true Christianity. Everything has to be developed. Higher knowledge has to be developed, but it's about time that we have it. Because there are so many things passing in front of our eyes that we can't understand if we don't have some spiritual knowledge about it. Even before we can research.
Right.
And there are so many things research that can help you understand our times, Steiner.
It's fair to say that Steiner really had a very inspiring vision of what a human being could be.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
If you only read what his experience of the human ego was in his own development when he was about 20, I mean, that was something going so deep that he had an experience that there was something indestructible, eternal in everyone.
Right.
Usually it is in deep sleep. So he was having an experience of the full potential, as very few other people have.
Right. One of the things that is astonishing to me about Steiner is that his works live on and spread and are all around us. They're having a dramatic impact, and yet many people are not aware that it came from Steiner.
Yeah.
Or who Steiner is, which is one of the many reasons I wanted to do this today. But I wanted to go through some of them to help people understand the extraordinary impact that Steiner has had. Let me step back. One of the concepts he had, which I think is the most important for a newcomer to Steiner to understand, is what I would call the threefold social order.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the threefold social order.
Mm-hmm. May I make a little remark to what he said before
come back?
Well, Steiner is, it's like a huge mountain, and we are still a bit too close to see its dimensions.
Uh-huh.
I think he belongs into the series of people like Aristotle,
right,
like Thomas Aquinas, and it will just take maybe another century so that everyone thinks, if you don't know about him, you are not up to date, so to speak. It's important. There are a lot of biases and distortions still in these days.
Well,
that will pass away.
I will confess my prejudice. I think the establishment has gone to great lengths to make sure nobody knows about it.
Yeah, they try.
Yeah.
And I can give you an example in threefold how this worked. Now, threefold, you want to come to threefold? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. That is actually not a program, but it says, research shows that the three abilities of the human being, the soul, to think, to feel, and to will, are in this day and age separating, they're getting loose. And you can see that daily. People thinking gets in a way of the feeling, and it has nothing to do with acting. And you have even on the pathological crime sides, an increasing number of even young people who kill or who steal, and who don't even have a motive. That means the threefold soul being, there is a threefold soul being also, is falling apart, which needs a new education and self-educating, that the emancipating of thinking, feeling, or willing has to be led by in a more free way than in ancient times, and that causes problems. And threefold in the social order is just an answer to the present tendency in every human being that his thinking needs some freedom, his feeling gets free, his willing gets free. Thinking is connected with truth finding, science, feeling with all you want to have in art and so on, and willing goes into the diverse in economy. That's the basic for the idea. What we need is the end of the nation state, which the First World War was actually ending in nation state, where everything is managed centrally, cultural affairs, political affairs, economic affairs. It's inadequate to the human souls. That's why we need something for the human souls. That's right. The difference of threefold and all sort of ideological programs.
Right.
And of course, then the state loses certain power. It doesn't control the education. The state doesn't control, like in Bolshevism, it was done, the economy. And what we have today is an overruling of economic powers that are not controlled.
Right.
They are just in the hand of, as you know very well from your background, of a small group who rules the planet with capitalist means, etc.
Right.
So that's the free soul would need to develop free spiritual life, cultural life. Then you have the domain of justice, policy, and then you have the economic life.
Right.
The three ideas of the French Revolution tended in this direction, but it was not possible to realize in a nation state, in a unitarian nation state. You need threefold, because freedom as the ideal for a free spiritual life cannot be practiced in economy, because there it is a caricature and perverse.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the brotherhood ideal. If the brotherhood ideal is practiced in spiritual matters, then you share opinions in a way that is absurd. You cannot socialize the truth of some spiritual fact in the same way. The three ideals need three more or less autonomous domains in social life and public.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Steiner created and has evolved into one of the most prevalent, largest independent school networks in the globe in 60 countries is the Waldorf School. So talk a little bit about how the Waldorf Schools got started and grew.
Well, in Steiner's biography in Vietnam, he was a poor student. He gave private lessons. And for example, he came into a Jewish family with a backward, not very normally developed child. And he taught this child. I mentioned that because the abnormities, and I'm not judging there, of soul development were telling him more about what a real education should be in developing. And he had a deep insight into human evolution and thought, for example, there are laws also in individual development. The first 7 years, the child is actually inclined to think the world is good and it wants to imitate. In the second period, the world is beautiful. And in the third, that's going to 21, the world is truthful. And according to these laws, he thought the child must have not a premature intellectualism, as today it's always really done today. Childhood is, in a way, is struck under attack, as you know better in America. And the 3 7-year period are basic. Birth to seven to the change of the second teeth, missed the first teeth change, puberty, there are laws to follow, and the child needs an authority in the second period. In the first, it imitates. In the second 7 years, it wants to have authorities.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-authoritarian theory just didn't work. It makes people, you know, without orientation. And in the third period, it needs teachers who start to awake the individual judgment faculty. This is a law. And today, that is not really taken into account of. And then he was basing all he did in education on the idea that is also there before Schiller and Goethe and others. We have to strive that the human being is able to develop all his faculties.
Right.
Don't specialize as quickly as possible. In the future, it's more important that you have people who understand life as a whole. Like Dean Dunlop, about whom I have founder of the World Power Conference, told a pupil of his once, a friend of his one, they told him, David, don't specialize. There are too many people who only specialize. Look at life as a whole. And I think that's at the core of Stern's pedagogy.
Right, and it's interesting because one of the ways that the leadership controls
because
they keep people only knowing a little bit in their little specialty.
Exactly.
And what Steiner encourages is one, an integrated kind of knowledge, but also effective socially. So an integrated knowledge, effective socially, but then the, using the power of imagination.
Yeah, also.
Right.
And you know, of course, also the human being is having antisocial and social tendencies, and we need antisocial tendencies.
Right.
If a writer or an artist is acting, he is for himself, and he doesn't want anybody to tell him what to do and how to do it. So we need that too. And of course, the tendency to be antisocial is stronger today. That's a historical thing from the development. So we have to put some effort in cultivating our social faculties. And this is also trying to do in Waldorf by, for example, not preferring those who are very bright and very specially skilled, but to have a community feeling.
Right.
By doing all sorts of things together.
Right.
And that's part of it.
What I'd never known until I looked into it recently was the Waldorf. The name Waldorf came because the owner of the Waldorf Astoria cigarette company decided he wanted to create a school for his employees, for the kids of his employees, and to apply Steiner's philosophy, and then it became so successful.
He was actually the owner of a very successful cigarette factory.
Yeah.
Right? That was the beginning.
And
for
I looked it up.
Workers, not for the elite.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, but the elites always pile in when something good is going on.
Yeah.
So, do you know how many Waldorf schools there are around the world?
That's a good question. I'm afraid I can't give you the exact number.
There are over 1,000.
Over 1,000.
In 60 countries, and that's just the schools. Kindergartens is almost another 700.
And that I happen to know, in China, there is
they started in China.
Boom, there are 60 schools and I think 200 kindergartens already. That's interesting.
Yeah.
The phenomenon.
We just did a Soleri report about EMF radiation in which the scientist was talking about the importance of keeping kids away from this technology, how it can damage them. And one of the points I'm always making to clients when I recommend the Waldorf schools is they keep them off of that technology for a much longer time. Much longer.
A little bit, yeah. I know it with my own son. They are not having iPhones during the, certainly not during the class.
Right.
On the other hand, they see, of course, you have to introduce the technology, the understanding,
right,
and the right use for informing what's going on there and there. It's necessary to bring it in, with understanding.
Yeah.
The dual system, you know, based on the two, you have to understand this. And I think they do it, maybe not always in the best sense, but they try to do it.
Yeah, so Steiner always wants us to be of the world.
Steiner made, when he was at the end of his school, his chosen subject was to explain the telegram, which was just a new thing.
Uh-huh.
So that was him.
Yeah.
And you know, he did not have enough time to show his childhood, his autobiography. He was living in nature at the same time at the station building of trains going through.
His father was a train master. Right.
So he was totally in these two spheres at the same time.
Yeah.
Love with nature, beings he could still see, elementals. And then on the other hand, he was fascinating with this new world of technique.
Yeah. Okay, biodynamic farming is another thing that he basically seeded and has blossomed and grown all over the world.
Yeah.
So tell us how that happened.
It came rather late in life. Also, his love for agriculture and peasantry was always there, as a boy already. It came at the end of his life that he gave this course in Breslau with a lot of lectures and with a lot of things that start to be recognized now. For example, he said, never feed cows with or cattle and sometimes. They don't eat meat. If you feed them meat, they get deranged.
Right.
And the whole phenomenon we had a couple of years ago, very loud in the press, was predicted. That was just the wrong treatment of these animals.
Right.
And fortunately, it gets an interest today in England, as you know. Someone like Prince Charles is very favorable with biodynamics, gives speeches, and is not shy to mention there is a basic cause for a new agriculture, which is not favoring the monocultures, which kill everything, and the peasants, Monsanto-like, dependent. But there is a renewal of the earth by doing what is called, I don't know the English word, preparate,
which permaculture?
It's not chemical, it's you need the bull horns,
right,
the cow horns, to make some kind of fertilizer.
Soil. Yeah.
Exactly.
Preparing
which
the soil.
Is not chemical and which is effective for wherever it is done.
Right.
I know a group in Nepal, for example, who does that now about 7-8 years ago. In India, there are people all over. This is certainly something in the future.
We had, on the Solera Report, we had Angela Curtis, who's trained to develop soil from the Michael Fields Institute.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so one of the things I've always wanted to ask you was, we've talked about...
May I add?
Yeah.
There is a conversation between Steiner and Aaron Fried Pfeiffer, who was in America and took a lot off on the biodynamic direction. And Pfeiffer once asked Steiner, why are people so weak in their will? Why don't they do... Also, you gave all these spiritual exercises. Where are the clairvoyants? Why don't people do these things? And Steiner said to him, it's a question of nourishment. The nourishing products today, they don't give forces so that you can, your astral, from your inner, use your life forces to act things. That's, of course, a one-sided answer. We cannot dogmatize it, but it shows how important healthy nourishment is.
We haven't published it yet. We have a great interview with Francois Vecchio, who is a fabulous Swiss butcher who now works in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said during the interview is he said, you know, Europeans on average spend double what Americans spend every year on food, but Americans spend double every year on medical care what Europeans spend.
Yeah, that's fine.
And
yes.
I'm reminded just because, you know, I've been in Europe now for a week and the quality of the food is fantastic compared to the United States.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. And to me, that nourishment. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, which is not, a major issue, but comes up, I was very struck by the fact that you took an interest in 9/11 and have written a book about 9/11. It's called, what's the name of it? It's Truth?
Reality, Truth, and Evil.
Right. Very good title. And so how was it that you came to to write a book about 9/11?
Well, I had by chance or not already known the story of Pearl Harbor, the real story of Pearl Harbor.
Right.
How Roosevelt misled the whole public and the Congress and everyone in the world. So when that happened, and immediately people said, well, that's a new Pearl Harbor, and so on. I thought, oh, is that a new Pearl Harbor? Well, in what sense?
Yeah.
And that started me off. And I was soon convinced that this is a huge crime. You can even say an admirable crime. It was quite a difficult thing.
It was the single most profitable covert operation in the history of Western civilization.
And I would even go so far and say, and I have been, as you know, through my other publications, very interested in clarifying the First World War.
Right.
And its impacts. Well, Second World War is an impact, for example, of it. But 9/11, this single day, has the, for me, the caliber of importance of the whole First World War.
Right.
Because whatever we have right now till the very present minute is all tied, I wouldn't say to the event of 9/11, but to the forced acceptance of how this event is
right.
explained, you know, with the conspiracy theory, which is official.
Right.
That's the official conspiracy theory, is the worst of all possible conspiracy theories.
Right.
And so 9/11 cannot be, should not be underestimated in its value. And then we have, from a spiritual point of view, so many lies around. And lies have, from a spiritual point of view, of course, an effect. They paralyze consciousness. They fog in consciousness. So it is also a hygienic task of the truth seekers to make at least clear what cannot be the truth, even if they can't find all explanations.
It's amazing in America, the lies have paralyzed the communications and the trust between people.
Yes.
And the lies are contributing to an enormous debasement of the culture. It's very, very scary to watch. And I wanted to bring this up because you had a description of the present age which really struck me. You said that lies create elemental beings, and those elemental beings need more lies for their nourishment.
Exactly.
And it captured energetically what is happening.
Yeah, I think that's a deep thing, and we should have a higher trust of truth. I think that we can say there is a good aspect of all these lies, if they have happened. I'm not recommending lying, but you can say the clarification of lies as lies gives truth a higher price, a higher appreciation.
Right.
And there is, maybe one can just make this little statement, there is, of course, very deep things in America, in the political sphere is dark and full of lies, but if you take a man like Emerson, who says every physical law has a spiritual equivalent. And then he says, as an example, take the law of gravity. Everything goes to the center of the earth. In the spiritual world, the correspondent law is that everything will gravitate to truth in the end.
Right.
That's a tremendous trust in the truth.
Right.
And lies can be looked at, obstacle to go through, because you need more determination. And the 9/11, some of the people in the 9/11 truth movement are highly respected for their will to go through all deceptions, even if they fail sometimes. Mike Rupert is an example, whom you know, and many others, of course.
It's very interesting. During my litigation with the federal government, in the last trial, there were three legal teams on the other side, and they were having a terrible fight with each other. It was so bad that they were having it in front of us. And one guy turned to the other and said, "You don't know that that's true." And the other guy said, "Yeah, I know. Fitz said it." And what had happened was, I had become the only person that they trusted.
Huh.
They didn't trust each other.
Yeah.
They didn't trust their own witnesses, but they trusted me.
Interesting.
It was, you know, it had all come back to the fact that nobody could function without something being reliable, and I was it. It's very funny.
So we hope that there are more people like that who can be trusted.
I think there are.
If they are truthful, but are there many truthful people who really fight for truth and even pay a price?
Well, here's the thing. What I discovered going through that period in Washington is you have people who understand that our soul is immortal. And you have a lot of people who don't.
Yeah.
And they don't. If you know that your soul is immortal, then you understand there are terrible ramifications to supporting or engaging or facilitating evil.
Yeah.
You know, the ramifications are much more expensive than you think if it's, you know, you think it's a short-term temporary thing.
Yeah, okay.
And to me, that is one of the reasons I think Steiner can help a lot of people is he really communicates the fact that we're dealing with in spiritual reality.
Yeah.
And that lies or truth matter in much greater ways than folks understand.
Which, maybe that's also, we can shortly reflect on the point that that's why also reincarnation, which is at the heart of Steiner's core mission, is of course a booster of morality.
Yes.
Or take it
seriously. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I know there will be consequences, yeah. So let's not do the most stupid things all the time.
Right.
And, just to add this.
So I wanted to ask you what, because Steiner talks about the future.
Yeah.
And he goes way into the future. And he talks about different phases that are coming beyond his lifetime. What does Steiner say that is relevant to what is going on now?
Well, he of course saw the coming of the West power, Eastern power in 1917, about 100 years ago, and the function of Europe, the three parts of the world that were dysfunctioning by the destruction of the middle, if you like. And you could see in the future, we have tasks to help the new culture in the future, which will be Slavic. And he saw there is a fight for the future in certain also groups with some occult knowledge, that they want to dominate even the future by dominate the childhood of the Slavic people.
Right.
That's the background of the socialist experiment. One of the backgrounds, there are also more economic foreground backgrounds, if you like. And so he wanted to see, to have the tendencies that are really thinking in the interest of the whole humanity, not a group, be it Western or Eastern.
Right.
Humanity. That's why also the economic question is so important for him. And what we have today, the globalization, is a caricature of a true world economy. It's a caricature because it's not for everyone.
Right.
It creates riches, tremendous, absurd riches, and the rest of the people can go to hell and starve and so on.
Oh, but it's depleting. It's depleting the soil.
Of course.
It's depleting the nourishment. It's depleting the life force.
Of course, of course. And he was especially, of course, also seeing clearly the tendency that the Middle Europeans are an obstacle for those who want to have the power increasing in the West. So they have to see that they get into the trap of the first, of Hitlerism,
right,
financed by Western powers. That's very clear today. And the Germans were so naive. I'm not saying they did terrible things. Of course they did terrible things, but they were helped to do this. They fall into a pit out of naivete to a certain degree, and now they are down. You know, as the great word of the first general secretary of the NATO, why is the NATO there? What is the purpose of the NATO? He said, I hope I get it right, to keep the Americans in, the Germans down, and the Russians out.
That's a man who's very clear about
very
reality.
Clear. That's what we have today.
I never heard that one. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, so where were we?
So we're talking about what Steiner says about what's going on today. Steiner thinks that Russia is very important.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah. Tell us what he says.
Well, he says the Russian, the Slavic, there is a Slavic element which is overseeded or covered by a whole layer which is Bolshevism. Bolshevism is not Russia.
Right.
It's a Western export.
Right.
So you have a deeper layer which will come up later. And the Russians, in that deeper sense, they don't want war. They are not interested in wars and fighting and imperialism and getting a great empire. There is a kind of a peace element.
Right.
A spiritual element.
Right.
Also to be open for spiritual facts and realities. So that is something very important for the future. And it should be helped by the Europeans. They should be, in a way, the advisors of this young Slavic population. But they are not now, because they have handcuffs of guilt, if you like. And the Western powers are happy about it, because then they can do their purely materialistic economic exploitation of the...
Does Steiner ever talk about the Russian Orthodox Church? I don't remember.
Also, yeah.
He
also,
does?
Yeah, he does. I mean, he sees the great thing in it, but he sees also it's for the present day mentality. It keeps people in a certain imaginative but dreaming mode of being, which is not so fit for the challenges of the technology.
Right.
So it has not a great future, I think. Spiritual truth is higher than any religions in the future, I think.
Yes.
Spiritual truth finding is the element, not whether you have a Buddhist or a church background.
Well, I have to tell you my favorite Steiner.
Yes, please.
I'll never forget when I first contemplated reading Steiner. You know, I was presented with maybe 50 to 100 books of his lectures. I thought, how am I ever going to read all of this? And so I found Ann Watson, who agreed to read with me while I would drive around. She loves to read and has a very theatrical voice. And in fact, she's recording the agricultural course for us. And
very good.
And so, you know, so I've been driving the interstates for the last decade listening to Steiner.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite, I have to tell you, is I'm a Christian. And listening to Steiner on Christ, I love my favorite book of lectures is The Mystery of Golgotha. I just love it. I keep saying, Ann, let's read The Mystery of Golgotha mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. Because I found with Steiner, you can read again and again. Yeah. You know, it's like peeling an onion. You don't just get it the first time.
Yeah.
You have to keep reading.
Yeah.
And, but on Christ and on the history of Christianity and different aspects of Christianity, the stream, what he calls the stream, maybe you could explain what a stream is. I find him absolutely fascinating and inspiring and very informative.
Mm-hmm.
It gets me to look at things in ways I would never have thought of.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because Christianity, of course, as he started seeing it, is not found in the church, because he speaks of a new revelation of the Christ being. Actually, what one of the great cardinals, Cardinal Newman, once said before he became cardinal, it is necessary to have a new revelation. And he hoped it comes in the church, but it didn't. And that is what Steiner, in a way, could experience. And he speaks concretely of a new Christ event in the 20th century, not in the physical world as some materialistic theosophists believe. The Krishnamurti, they expected the reincarnation of the Christ or the Buddha, that they weren't even very clear about who's who. But he said, that is true, that's a story for itself.
Yeah.
But he said, in the etheric plane, in the spiritual, where the life forces are, there in the Christ revelation, and the etheric is not like the physical around centers. In the etheric, you have peripheries. You can even see that in the plant growth. The influx of the etheric forces come from all sides.
Right.
So in the etheric world, you have no center. So this is a Christ event which has no center. You could say it's in Rome or it's in Dormagen.
It's non-local.
It's global.
Right.
And it is even connected with a new experience of what is actually happening in the seasons around the world, what is happening in the seasons opposite in the region of our antipodes. So it speaks of a concrete new Christ experience. To understand this, we have to have an understanding of the etheric,
right,
the life forces, which helps to understand the new biodynamic also, because this is an approach to the life behind the physical.
Well, it's funny, you know, Steiner never had a marketing department, didn't have an advertising agency, and yet you see these things spread dramatically around the world, and it shows you that he's tapping into this etheric power.
Yes. I mean, this is a good sign. I think Steiner will survive. It must. He is a phenomenon for 1,000 years, at least, like Aristotle.
Yeah.
And it will just become natural to talk about him.
Right.
But today, there is also one aspect. We go over a threshold to the spiritual world. That's one of the teachings in Steiner. Threshold. Everyone unconsciously goes actually, is spiritualized. But the question is he able to keep up with that development of his own soul, with his consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
Does he want to go over the threshold in consciousness? And that requires the courage of a new, deeper self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go over if we have illusions about our own egos and all this. And there is a problem that keeps some people back because they're afraid of that. So they want spirituality, but they want, I call it sometimes, wellness spirituality.
Right.
Where the whole thing is that you feel well and so on. And that's why it takes some time. And the second thing is, anthroposophy is for freedom development. It cannot work with suggestive means like the Jesuits can.
Right.
Or some Masons do. They want that something happen. They don't want that people understand what you have. And that's if you have a free impulse like anthroposophy, you have to wait till people understand why it is a good thing to have an education system like that, or biodynamics, and that's why it just takes time.
So let's say I'm a beginner, and I've decided I want to learn Steiner. Give me two pathways. One, if I want to master the core works, and then if I don't know yet if I want to invest the time to master the core works, I just want to start. I just want to begin. So walk us through the core works, what you think a basic mastery would require, and then let's talk about where somebody could just nibble.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you said in your personal case, you love Christianity. There's actually not only the lectures, the great lectures, that I love too, but there is one core work, which is called Christianity as a Mystical Fact. That is a written one. It's very short. That is one of the core works. I think there are about 8 or 9. Another is called Theosophy, about the human being. And there is inner body, about reincarnation and karma. And then we have How to Get Knowledge of Higher Works. This is for the doers who want to exercise this and to have spiritual experiences. A whole structure of quite a few exercises you can do, which are even helpful if you don't want to become a clairvoyant, because it is good for the balance of the soul, for the clarity of thought, for the strengthening of the will. Then you have a work which I love most, of the basic works, Philosophy of Spiritual Activity, or as it is usually called, Philosophy of Freedom. And this is a book that stimulates the individuality's strengths in own authentic individual thought life. This is philosophical, but it's also practical. This is the philosophical practical keyword at the core of anthroposophy. And then you have Occult Science. This may be a funny title. It is a description of the spiritual part of evolution. It is complementary to Darwin and to all materialistic visions of the universe. How did it start? What were, of course, also the spiritual entities who brought this complex world into existence. That's an evolution book, and I think for everyone who is interested in the history of our world, this is one of the key ones.
Now, when you say that Steiner was clairvoyant, what does that mean? What is a clairvoyant?
A clairvoyant is a person who sees supersensible phenomena, elementals, angels, archangels. I think the latter is quite large. But the important thing, or the interesting thing with Steiner, is you have it all. In one respect, people can be clairvoyant quite easily in a very important respect. If they think, salt as such is a clairvoyant ability. Mm-hmm. You cannot see salts anywhere. You cannot explain them from the physical, from the soul, not even. These are spiritual and they are the laws. They are the essence. That's the most important clairvoyant way of today. If salt is not there, people can get easily clairvoyant today. That's not a big deal. But you have a lot of people clairvoyant, but they don't know what they see, what they believe.
Right.
Look at the reincarnation literature today. It's full of illusions sometimes. So to be clairvoyant today means also to maintain a clear thinking, which has already the germ of clairvoyance in that was done as part. People don't see that easily.
Okay, so if I don't want to commit to master the core yet, where can I begin? Where can I nibble if I'm just going to read one thing?
It depends. I mean, if you're a more Christian background person, uh-huh. I would take Christianism as a mystical fact. If you're more a scientist with a historical interest, I would turn to occult science.
Uh-huh.
If you want to know how is the human being built? What is beyond the physical, the etheric, the astral,
uh-huh.
the ego, even higher, then I would turn to theosophy. And if you are philosophically minded, want to base everything on the power of your intellect in the good sense, I would turn to the philosophy of spiritual activity or philosophy of spirit. If you're interested in threefold, you can go to the Kernpunkt, what is that, in 1919. Or the memoranda on threefold. They are also published as written works. These are the basic books, and I think all the worlds of lectures are like footnotes to the basic books. And some people are much more fascinated by reading the footnotes for a lifetime.
Not me.
Like you.
Not me.
No. I read the footnotes with great fascination,
yeah.
But then I try to relate them back to the basics.
Well, some of them are very long and
of
fascinating.
Course.
Yeah. Okay, so I just have to ask you, what is your personal favorite?
Okay. May I add also something to the threefold?
Was
a bit coarse. And I have a bit of an urge, like today, the whole money question, that you know much more about than I do. But some basic idea is so great in Steiner. I'll tell you a story. When I was in Nepal, I talked to the founder of the bio movement in Nepal.
Uh-huh.
And we had a breakfast and I told him, you know, in Steiner, an idea, they give you the reason, is if you have a 100-franc note, there will be a date on it, the expiry date, like with food. And it's natural that food is not eternal.
Right.
So, and with Steiner, money should be reflecting the production of human beings. The primary productions
uh-huh.
are what we need for eating. So they're just mirroring the real production processes.
Yeah.
And if we product things that are not eternal, of course money cannot be eternal.
Right.
But today many people treat money as a kind of a surrogate for substitute for an eternity that they don't experience in a spiritual way anymore.
Right.
So you have a note and you know, I have to spend it before the expiry date. I have to eat my bread before the expiry date.
Right.
And he found that fascinating. I think, oh, that's a great idea. I think he's right. But you cannot do that if you have too much realistic people, because they don't believe in anything which is enduring if it is not the physical. That's why they have the illusion money has to grow, 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 and are afraid that there will be a money system in which money has to circulate and is consumed. And then you have to show to institutions of the future what you have done with it. Either you have bought something, there are three kinds of money, buy money, give money, and lend money.
Right.
For different functions. And then if you can show what you have done instead of just putting it aside and let it grow without any real working, that's an absurd thing.
I'll tell you my favorite story. It's my favorite story outside of scripture. I heard a money manager in the City of London talk about it. He told the story in connection with why the money wasn't working. And then I'll tie it back to money after I tell you the story. It was a story from Jung. Jung had a patient come to see him who was a woman clearly from the upper echelons of society. She came in to see him and she said that she wasn't going to give him his name. She was only going to come once and never see him again. Have you heard this? It's in one of his books. And here was her story. As a very young woman, she had gone to medical school, become a doctor, and then had fallen in love with her best friend's husband. And she couldn't reconcile the tension. So being a doctor, she had the technology to do it. She murdered her best friend and married the husband. And from the moment she murdered her friend and married the husband, everything in her life went wrong. She had wolfhounds that were very beautiful and died. She was an accomplished horsewoman, but from then on the horses would buck and she had to give up riding. She got pregnant right after she got married, and then her husband died before the child was born. And her daughter hated her. And as soon as she was old enough to run away, she ran off and the mother didn't know where she was. And she told Jung that wherever she was, the birds would stop singing. She said the birds knew. And she had come to him in the hopes that confessing it would help her clear.
Yeah.
And what I always tell people in America is that the birds know. And you can't fix the money until you fix the field.
Yeah.
And so trying to solve this problem by printing more money,
yeah,
you know, the field needs to be addressed.
It's real.
Right.
But a reality becomes reality.
Right.
That's
right.
The
and you keep trying to, you know, people come to me and say, you know, can you get the money to work here locally? And my answer is no. Until you deal with the field,
exactly,
it can't work. And that's, I think, what Steiner would say.
I think that is exactly right. But
right,
it requires consciousness work, because if people would have a new access to real spiritual values, to things that you cannot destruct, even in your own being,
right,
then they are ready to see, oh, of course, money is just mirroring the processes which are not eternal of products we do. So money has to vanish and recreate it in an orderly way, not inflatory. So it's a one-sided belief in only growth. We always hear economy has to grow. Yes, but economy has also to be able to do the opposite in,
right,
in a disciplined way. And money cannot... Well, Steiner once said, it's like a horse which is getting mad. It has run off the reality basis.
Right.
And it should be led back to the reality basis. Money which grows without real reality basis, be it the field, you call it the field, is just unhealthy. And I think we come,
yeah,
to a point globally where that is evident.
Well, what you've got is you've got a financial system which is shrinking the pie.
Exactly.
Because it's so unhealthy.
Exactly.
Right. And so, I think that's, if you look at what's happening in America, you have so many people who understand that the way the governmental system is organized is shrinking the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that can't go anyplace good. You've got to stop it. You've got to deal with it. Okay. So,
my favorite, I didn't answer.
Yeah, I was going to. Okay, so what's your favorite?
You mean my favorite lecture or book?
Yeah, your favorite, well, I would say either book or series of lectures.
Well, book, I might have briefly mentioned it. Steiner was once asked by a very courageous student, cheeky question, Dr. Steiner, what do you think will rest stay from your work in 1,000 years or so? Quite cheeky, I think. And Steiner said, nothing. It's a special answer. You can't dogmatize it. Then the philosophy of spiritual activity. If you go this path, you can find the whole anthroposophy. Right. It's the seed for it. And so that's the answer to it. And I like this book. I'm going through it with classes and alone, actually almost permanently. And I discover new things.
What's the name?
The philosophy of spiritual activity, right, or intuitive thinking. Yeah. You know, Steiner was not happy with the literal translation philosophy of freedom. Mm-hmm. He said, freedom, a word with dom in English, is always a collective thing. Dom was Latin. Freedom in the English is a kind of a collective tendency a British has, but it's not an individual achievement.
Right.
Automatically. So, whereas Freiheit in German gives an individual achievement state. So he thought it's better to circumscribe it, but today they call it philosophy of freedom. But that's my favorite.
Uh-huh.
But also, of course, I like actually almost all the lectures I have.
Uh-huh.
Because it's always interesting.
It is.
The Christology, the fifth gospel, of course, and the things about evil, the Faust lectures,
for example,
are wonderful.
He understands evil.
By the way, maybe...
A lot of times when I drive a lot around the United States, and I keep thinking, oh my God, we're being overrun by Ahriman.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we just published the lectures about the incarnation of Ahriman in the West.
Yeah.
That is happening now in the States.
Yeah.
So what Steiner, and he says this is one of the basic views you find in philosophy. We live in the age where the confrontation of evil is the underlying task.
Right.
Not like in the Greek time or in the Egyptian. Every age has its task. That's why we are surrounded by evil, because we have to
confront it,
learn to understand it. And I found, maybe I can close with that, I have found in seminars on evil questions, 9/11 and others, of course, there is a helping in a thought which is really helping, I think, if one takes it seriously. In the higher world, there is no evil in the highest plane. Evil belongs into time and space. There is no eternal evil. There is eternal good. There are higher beings who admit the genesis of evil for our development, but they are higher. They could have done otherwise. There is no absolute evil. It's an important thought, because if people come into the emotional stream of, oh, you never know what is winning, and so on, they lose the trust of the higher, which is beyond the dualities.
Right.
Beyond the dualities. I think this is important, because otherwise you always see that people get very emotional if it gets into evil. One hates it, one has fear of evil, and hate of evil doesn't have to understand it.
Right.
So that we need a bit of a higher perspective.
Right, you have to get your perspective over it.
Exactly.
Right. Well, this has been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you for this talk.
I want to hear a little bit more about you, about what's coming up in terms of magazines, books. Help us understand how to access your work. So start with your website. The website for the publishing company is?
www.percys.ch.
Okay.
I'm not very proud. It can be much better than the future. I'm sorry. But you find a few even English things.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you do.
Politics.
You do. The books are, yeah. Yeah.
It can be managed.
And The Present Age is available in English.
It's available in English. You find it on the webpage.
Yeah.
If you want to have an issue or so, by PayPal or so. Otherwise, you can subscribe to it or get a free number. Yeah, and I'm writing again. I want to turn more to literature. After all these biographies with a lot of footnotes. So I was happy to write some little books without footnotes.
Yeah.
So I make some kind of, if you like, I wrote some dramas also, little dramas on multi-political. We will probably make an Lawrence Oliphant, one of the most fascinated agents and artists in the 19th century in Great Britain.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he is not so known. He was in everything political at that point, including Zionism in Israel. He was a great man, and these things are inspiring for me for future work, I think.
So now you're doing a lecture tour next year in the United States.
That's correct.
And I'm going to put that up. It's October and November.
Yes.
Yeah, many cities.
Many cities. Yeah, in the east and the west, I think. If they'll let me in.
They'll let you in.
You think so?
I think so.
Because I'm not a billionaire, probably.
No, I think because you're in that stream.
Okay.
Anyway, but we'll put it up on the website. And I just want to mention again, you've been very gracious because you have to, you came all the way over from Basel and you're going to head back to Basel. You have a speech tonight.
That's right.
Yeah.
Helmut von Moltke, Middle Europe, the World Policy, the Eastern Perspectives.
Yeah.
And the Life After Death.
Yeah.
I'm going to speak about someone in the cover, of course, and say, I'm not going to speak about Helmut von Moltke.
Uh-huh.
You all know it, and you have prejudices of him. I'm going to speak about what happened after his death. That's
right.
Where his life begins. So I start with the post-mortem. You know, to speak about that because this is documented.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But people still don't work with it. I'm sure the Russians are interested in these things.
Yeah.
That's why we want to go to this.
Well, if you do the conference in St. Petersburg, I'm coming. So you have to let
me
know.
Very good.
We'll let our network know. And then next time when I'm in Europe, I have to come over to Basel.
Yes, please do.
And see this great group of people.
Please do.
Who's conspiring.
Terry Boardman, who writes in the present age.
Uh-huh.
And we have every year a session in Basel.
Uh-huh.
Terry will be there. He speaks perfect German and English.
Uh-huh.
And Brachel and some of our regular keyboarders.
Yeah.
Might be fun.
The way we say it in the Solari Report, we're in cahoots.
In cahoots. Very good. Thank you for this. Thank you for asking me to come to your program.
Thomas Meyer, fabulous, fabulous. Introduction to Rudolf Steiner. This has been fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.